Jan, do you want to start the recording?
Yes, it's on now.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. Today is January 24th, 2023. It's 9:02 a.m. We are here for the annual meeting of the Annuity and Pension Board Retirement System of the City of Milwaukee. And can we have a roll call, please, Jan?
Yes, Ms. Ford.
Present.
Mr. Helling. Mr. Helling, present. Ms. King?
Present.
Ms. King?
Not there.
Not present as yet. Mr. Klusman?
Here.
Mr. Conrad?
Here.
Mr. Kovac?
Here.
Ms. Sawa?
Here.
Mr. Bell?
Here.
Quorum.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. Terry, can we just go over who's attending?
Yes, so I've got Mr. Kovac, Ms. Sawa, Mr. Bell, Ms. King just joined, Mr. Gopalan, Mr. Silver, Mr. Walters, Ms. Ford, Mr. Sawa, Mr. Conrad, Ms. Johnson, Mr. McLean, Mr. Helling, Mr. Cartwright, Mr. Trussman, Mr. Allen, Ms. Turk, Ms. Wills, and Terry Sneaky.
We have members from the public?
On the other line.
How many?
Two, three, four.
Okay, thank you.
Hey, thank you, Terry. We will jump right into the agenda. Item number one is the introduction of new board member Timothy Helling. Go ahead, Tim.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Tim Helling, 37 years old. I was on the board previously, 5 or 6 years ago, for like 6 to 8 months until they reorganized the board. But I'm definitely ready to dive back in, and be the best trustee fiduciary I can be. A little bit about myself. I'm married, my wife Heather, for the last 12 years. We have one daughter, Emma. She's 7 in second grade. I'm a firefighter for the city for the last 18 years, lieutenant, soon to be captain, also a paramedic. Really enjoy my job serving the citizens of Milwaukee any way I can. I grew up in Milwaukee, lived here my whole life. My father and grandfather were both firemen as well. And seeing them living their lives in their retirement is a huge motivator for joining the board. Wanted to see the pension thrive for many, many, many more years. Initially, what got me into wanting to join the board was the stock market and how money's made and construction portfolios. But being able to get a sneak peek behind the curtain, being on the board for that short period of time, really piqued my curiosity, and I just can't wait to learn as much as I can about all the other aspects of that go into running a successful, you know, pension fund. So I look forward to getting to meet or reacquaint myself with each and every one of you, not just the board members, but the ERS staff as a whole. And my goal is to leave the pension fund in a stronger position than when I started. So thank you.
Thank you, Tim. Appreciate the words. Did anyone from the board have any comments or questions for Tim? All right, not hearing any. We will move on to item number two, officers for the 2023 year. Letter A is the election of chair. I'd like to open it up to the board members for a discussion or nominations regarding.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, sir. Go ahead, Rudy.
I would nominate Matthew Bell for chairman.
Thank you. Rudy, do I have a second regarding that nomination?
Mr. Chairman, Timothy Hine will second that.
Thank you, Tim, for the second. Any comments or questions from other board members regarding? Not hearing any, the nomination for Matthew Bell for the chairman for 2023 passes. And a quick comment, I, again, thank you for the
He has to ask three more times.
I know. That's okay, he did ask. He did ask.
So, working with everybody again, and obviously continue the things that we've been striving for over the last few years and further on. So thank you for that. Moving on to item number two, letter B, election of vice chair. I'd like to open it up for a discussion or nominations regarding that position.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Klusman.
Go ahead, Tom.
I'd like to nominate Mr. Kovac as vice chair.
Thank you, Tom. Is there a second regarding that nomination?
This is Conrad. I second.
Thank you, Mr. Conrad. We will then, any comments or questions or objections regarding? Not hearing any, the nomination for vice chair for Mr. Kovac passes. Mr. Kovac, do you have any comments or questions?
No, just happy to serve. Thank you for the nomination.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Kovac. Moving on to item number three, the approval of minutes. Item letter A for the minutes regular meeting held December 20th, 2022. Is there any comments or questions from board members or staff regarding those minutes?
This is Aicha. I move approval.
Thank you, Aicha. Is there a second for approval of the minutes?
Busman.
Thank you, Tom. Any objections regarding? Not hearing any, the motion to approve the December 20th, 2022 minutes passes. Moving on to item number four, the Chief Investment Officer report. Will that be handled by David or Eric this morning?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Sauer is prepared to speak first and provide the board with a performance update.
Excellent. Thank you, David. And go ahead, Eric.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning, everyone. I'll preface this by saying that, you know, when I'm talking about December numbers, they're very close to being final. We're still waiting on one report from our smaller hedge fund to fund manager. We do have an estimate where they've told us that they should be flat to slightly, very slightly positive for the month. So while these numbers are not final, we don't expect them to change materially from what's on the page here. So the fund ended December with a value of $5.47 billion, the return of negative 1.8% net of fees for the month outperformed the blended benchmark by approximately 38 basis points. The primary relative performance drivers was style bias, which added 29 basis points. That came from primarily U.S. large cap value and international. And the fund's manager selection added private equity added 23 basis points, while real estate detracted 21 basis points. You can see in the chart at the right that the fund has outperformed the benchmark in all the time periods we're showing. You'll also see for the one-year return, we're showing negative 6.5%. That's approximately a 10 basis point improvement from what we sent out with the board package, and that's due to our larger hedge fund to fund manager, UBS. Their final return for December came in a good amount better than the estimate that they had given us. So that was enough to move the total fund return up from negative 6.6 to negative 6.5. So that was nice to see. In 2022, the total fund, along with all asset classes except for real assets, outperformed their benchmarks net of fees. 10 out of the fund's 16 active mandates outperformed net of fees, and the fund has saw an investment change of negative $394.8 million, paid out benefits and expenses of $473.3 million, and received contributions of $117.9 million. As of through January 23rd, the fund is up approximately 3.4% in January, which brought the approximate value to $5.76 billion. 8 out of the 13 active mandates that we have data for at this point are outperforming year to date. The fund has seen a change in the value investments of positive $192.2 million. We've made our first expense payment to the city of approximately $1.9 million, and we've received contributions of $103.0 million. And due to those city and agency contributions, we'll be able to pay benefits from the fund cash balance this month. If there's any questions, I'd be happy to take them at this time. Otherwise, that concludes my report.
Thank you, Eric. Any comments or questions from board members? Not hearing any. Thanks again, Eric. And David, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the board. You know, as I mentioned last month, I mean, we have to temper everything. I mean, whenever we see the fund value going down and the negative returns, we can't control those things, but it obviously hurts to see that happen. At the same time, the things that we control as a collectively, as board members, as an organization, as staff together, setting the asset allocation, focusing on the implementation and trying to add value that way. There's a lot that we should and can feel really proud about. I mean, I'm looking at the reports, looking at the 10-year and 20-year returns right around 8% net of fees. The added value, you know, coming out of a difficult 2020, we really had a historic year in 2021 where markets went up a lot, and we added 607 basis points on top of that and ranked in the top quartile. We're now looking at a 2022 where the market was very different. I mean, anybody who invests their own money or follows markets closely, whether in this meeting or calling in, knows that it was really hard to avoid doing bad last year with stocks and bonds both down double digits. And for us to add what looks like about 410 basis points net of fees about performance in a bad year, looks like we're going to be in top quartile or in the top quartile again. We can feel good about those things. I mean, 400 basis points, 600 basis points. When you throw those numbers around on a $5 or $6 billion fund, you're talking about adding hundreds of millions of dollars to the fund. Everybody here should feel good about that. We're doing the best we can, looking out for the beneficiaries, and certainly adding value to the fund and doing the best we can.
Mr. Chairman, this
you know,
is Gary
what
Allen.
We do here, with all that said, what we do here is we talk about the past, but we have to position everything for going forward to be able to participate and make sure the fund's in the best spot it can be going forward. We worked really hard. You can see that pie chart on the slide in front of you with the ERS allocations as at the end of the year. You know, we had to spend a lot of time scrutinizing and making thoughtful decisions on the liquidity aspect of our fund last year, just with stocks and bonds both down as much as they were. We had to work really hard to get that public equity allocation as close to target as you can see it was going into this year, just given how stocks performed last year. And you know, we need to do that because over the long term we do need stocks, and so it's one of our growth assets. We need them to do well to hit our long-term targets over time. And you know, certainly too early to declare any successes in a short period of time, but we're certainly excited that, you know, markets have started to rally so far this year. And I think we can be happy, of course, that anytime you can get a talk about a potential 3.4% return in any given month, let alone to start the year. Hopefully, we'll cross our fingers that that markets can continue to rally as 2023 moves forward. You know, lastly, we're going to continue. We have talking about, you know, positioning the fund going forward at our upcoming investment committee meeting on February 9th. There's some really important stuff we're going to be talking about, so I hope everybody can, yeah, reviews the materials you're going to get at the end of next week and is ready to participate and thinks about some of the things we're going to be talking about. We're going to be doing phase one of the ALM study. This is with Callan's final 2023 capital market assumptions. This is where we talk about, yeah, that we want to get feedback from the board on what kind type of risk and return you're comfortable with, asset allocations, whether it's to alternatives or traditional asset classes, what you're comfortable with. We're going to talk about the path forward on our ongoing real estate investment manager search that we started, I think, in the second half of last year. Back in November, I promised some liquidity follow-up so we can have a thoughtful plan in terms of managing the fund's liquidity in 2023. So I'll be prepared to lead that discussion in a couple weeks. And this is all in addition to the normal stuff we do on the investment team. We'll be preparing the quarterly performance reports, due diligence reports, value add. Dave and I are going to be in San Francisco for a few days next week on a BlackRock due diligence visit. Eric was at a real estate conference last week, which I think is very timely with everything going on, some of the uncertainties going on in that sector. We're having some interesting manager meetings right now, just talking about year-end results and our portfolio positionings going forward. And there's a lot going on, but we're excited and looking forward to having the great conversations with you at this upcoming February investment committee meeting. I talked a lot, probably a little bit too long, but those are my prepared remarks. And if anything piqued your interest or you have any questions about it, I'm happy to answer them now if you want to follow up with me, I'm happy to do that too.
Mr. Chairman, this is Jerry Allen. I wanted to add one thing to what David's comments were. I think it's notable that our big sister fund in Madison, the Wisconsin Retirement System, had some congratulatory remarks directed towards us. I happened to be there last week. You know, the two senior people were there, and the WRS actually, their performance was minus 13 approximately. And that's a fund that's regarded as one of the best managed funds in the country. And I know they spend a lot of time and effort on defending their portfolio on the downside. And I just think it's notable that we were very successful, I believe, in defending our store of value that we have in our portfolio on the downside. Minus 6.6 is really a very remarkable result, given what's happened in the broader equity markets, and yet we still were able to participate in all the gains that were so remarkable in 2021. So anyway, that's my comment. WRS was down 13, we were down 6.6. Thank you.
Thank you, Jerry. Any other comments or questions from board members?
Thank you so much, Jerry, for those thoughts. We're definitely proud of that and happy to talk about that. And anybody who's listening, so it's clear, our number got improved to negative 6.5 just in the last few days, Jerry. So I just want to make sure that that's clear. So thank you so much for those comments.
Thank you, David. Thank you, Jerry. I was just going to mention the same thing, David. Not going to belabor it, but bring attention to that article that Jerry sent out to all of us. And just, just the fantastic work you and the staff are doing. Thank you. If no other comments or questions, we will move on to item number 5, letter A. authorization to sign vouchers.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chairman. So this is an annual housekeeping item. In the packet, you'll see there's a form with a lot of blanks next to the various positions for the trustees and officers. And so we'll be circulating this. This will take a few days since we're not meeting in person much anymore. But we will be sending this out to the various people, the comptroller, deputy, comptroller, etc. And these are...
Jerry?
Yes.
There is a mistake. The current deputy comptroller is Bill Christensen.
Oh, right. Yes, that changed recently. Thank you for noting that. Aisha will correct that right away.
Okay. Just wanted to make a note.
Yep. So this is technically a resolution, so we do need a motion to accept as revised.
Great. Thank you, Jerry. Any comment, questions?
I'll make the motion to approve.
Thank you. And do we have a second?
Conrad seconds.
Thank you, Mr. Conrad. Any objections regarding? Not hearing any, the motion to approve the authorization to sign vouchers for 2023 passes. Moving on to item number 5, letter B, we have the retirements, death claims, and refunds for December 2022. Okay. Go ahead, Jerry.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So the regular monthly report is in your packet, and if there's any questions or comments, we'll be happy to take them. Otherwise, we need a motion to approve the payroll for December.
Just can I make that motion?
Thank you. Thank you, Jerry. Any comments regarding? Not hearing any, do I have a motion to approve payroll for December?
This is Ms. King, and I'll make that motion.
Thank you, Ms. King. Do I have a second?
Mr. Helen, a second.
Thank you, Tim. Any objections regarding? Not hearing any, the motion to approve payroll for December passes. Moving on, item 5, letter C, conference requests for the January 2023 board meeting.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This month, this item is merely a placeholder because we didn't really have any conference requests at this time. But in the back of the packet, there's a list of the many of the conferences that are available this year. And trustees are always encouraged by the staff and the chair to consider education and training for coming months. But nothing for approval this month.
Thank you, Jerry. Any comments from board members regarding? Not hearing any. Moving on to item 5, letter D, approval of 2022 security lending budget.
Thank you.
Go ahead, Jerry.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is another annual routine housekeeping item, and Mr. Gopalan, our Chief Financial Officer, has graciously told us that he would step us through the numbers on this, on the schedule that you have in your packet. Are you there, Daniel?
Yes, I am. Thank you, Jerry. This is Daniel Pollan. I'm the Chief Financial Officer. Like Jerry said, this is an annual housekeeping item. Our securities lending program is run by our custodian, Northern Trust. The program generates revenue by lending out our securities. We split the earnings with Northern Trust 80-20. And then Chapter 36 requires that we sweep the security lending's earnings into the combined retirement fund every year. And our earnings have been trending lower in the last 10 years, mostly due to our high collateral requirements and the fact that we have fewer securities in separate accounts, meaning that we have less stocks to lend out for the program. In 2022, our earnings were just over $791,000. This was an increase from 2021, which it was just under $553,000. And the increase is mostly due to the volatility in the market. In 2021, the market was much better, and so that our earnings were less. So with that, if anyone has any questions about the program or the numbers, I'd be more than willing to answer them.
Mr. Chair?
Thank you. Go ahead, Tom.
Yeah, sorry for this probably obscenely basic question there, Dan, but when you said 80-20 split, you know, in this world, you have to kind of, you can never, I'd assume we get the 80, but you never know with these kinds of things?
Yes, yes, I should have clarified, yes. We get the 80, okay. And trust gets the 20.
Yeah, I assume that, but then, you know, with manager fees, you never really know, so thanks.
Oh, that's quite true, Tom. This is Jerry. Actually, this is an improvement. The 80-20 split is an improvement from the prior arrangement we had with Northern. And my memory isn't as good as it used to be, but there was a time when we used to, the split was 75-25. And I would invite David and Eric to make any additional comments about this, about the conditions in the market that led to a $791,000 amount. So in some years, it's been over $1 million, depending on, you know, the lending activity. Any comments, gentlemen, on that?
Yeah, you know, Terry, if you don't mind going to the next slide, it's either the next slide or the slide after.
Right.
We're going to this is an interesting chart that's, I think, Dan's team probably put together. So, I mean, there's a couple big variables. Number one, when we had these numbers in the millions, I guess, taking a step back, we only get securities lending, the only securities lending dollars that show up here come from our separate accounts. And I think that's really critical to understand, because when our portfolio was mainly stocks and bonds, those were mainly separate, a lot of separate account assets that were available to be a loan to begin with. As we've grown our hedge fund portfolios, our private equity portfolios, our real estate portfolios, those are just our market value of our funds going up, but we're not able to lend those assets through our custodians, so they don't show up here. So that's probably the biggest driver of why this has declined and why you're not seeing numbers like 1.5 million or 1.3 million like you used to before. I'd say the other side of it is that when markets, it's kind of counterintuitive or a weird thing about securities lending. When markets are volatile and going down, there's more investors in this world that are trying to make money shorting stocks. They're trying to short stocks. That's how when you're long a stock or a bond, you're making money when it goes up in value. And when you're short the stock or bond, you're making money when it's going down. So last year was a year where there was a lot of volatility. Markets went down a lot. There were more people interested in borrowing our securities to try to make money while things were going down. And in a weird way, that helped our number go from $553,000 last year to $792,000 last year. So I think we'd rather have markets go up and have less money from securities lending, but it's just how securities lending worked, and we got a couple hundred thousand more into our funds by doing this in a year like last year.
Thank you, David.
You're welcome.
Thank you, David. Any other comments about the security lending budget?
So, Matt, we do need a resolution to approve sweeping this into the general fund, into the combined fund.
Excellent. Thank you, Jerry. Do I have a motion to approve the 2022 security lendings budget?
Board moves approval.
Motion. Or I make a second.
Great. I heard Ms. Ford with the first and Mr. Kovac with the second. Any objections regarding? Not hearing any, the motion to approve the 2022 security lendings budget passes. Moving on to item five, Letter E, annual obligation of trustees and ERS officers to submit annual statements of economic interests. Go ahead, Jerry.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. So in your packet, you have the copy of the form that's been updated for this current year's submission. And this year, it can be done online. The fields can be filled in. The due date is the 28th, and I'm told by the folks at the Ethics Board that they're very, very much serious about getting these in on time, and there is, in fact, the potential for a $50 a day fine for every day beyond the 28th. So it behooves all of us to fill these out in a timely way. We will probably give another reminder next month, although the board meeting is on the 28th, which would be the deadline. So if you would like, it'd probably be easiest if you take a minute or two sometime in the next 3 weeks or so to fill out this form and make sure that we don't attract any undue attention from the Ethics Board. Again, it's just a routine item that we do every year. Thank you.
Thank you, Jerry. Any comments or questions regarding?
Mr. Chair, it's Mr. Helling.
Go ahead, Jim.
I was just making sure I filled this out already. Is that correct, Jerry?
I'm sorry, Tim, I couldn't hear that.
I filled this out before I joined the board. Would that be good enough?
Yeah, I think there's a separate requirement. Oh, I see. So you're saying basically you don't have anything further to disclose for last year because you already got to disclose this in December, right? I'm going to double check that for you. That seems like a reasonable position to take, but the requirements are technically separate. But I'll double check, and maybe the only thing you have to do is send another copy, but I don't know. But that's a very good question, and it's been a few years since we had a new trustee, so I'll double check and get back to you right away. Thanks for inquiring about that.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other comments or questions? Right, not hearing any. We'll move on to item 5, letter F, proposed change to board rule 3, period E.
Yes.
Is Gus, are you on the line?
No, Gus is on vacation in Florida this week, and so I guess I will speak to this a little bit. This item was carried over from last month. It's a redline copy that you have in your packet to make some revisions, and we did run it past Patrick McClaney at the city attorney's office. And Patrick, if you're online, please feel free to comment. And I think the items that we wanted to, you know, clarify here at the request of trustee is basically this provides for that an in-person examination could be waived in rare cases. I think we had a situation where we had someone who was on kidney dialysis and actually coming from out of state into Wisconsin and Milwaukee would pose a health hazard to that person, maybe even life-threatening. But this is very rare. I mean, it's the first time it's come up in my 15 years that I've been executive director. So we clarified that this would have to be upon the approval of the full medical panel and also or the medical council, and not just one physician for the medical council. The medical panel. The medical panel, as you may recall, is two physicians. It's typically the attending physician is appointed by the union, and then the city has an appointment as well. And so in this case, if there were going to be a waiver of the in-person examination, it would have to be unanimous between both the union and city appointed physicians. And so we wanted to clarify that. And I expect this to be rare. Furthermore, this matter would be reported to the board if there's any waiver granted. In a rare case, it would be immediately reported at the next board meeting so that the board has the ability to monitor this and make sure that this isn't somehow gamed or abused. And so that's really what was intended here. Patrick, do you have any other insights into this if you're on the line?
Yeah, good morning, everyone. Assistant City Attorney Pat McClain. I think the only thing I would add, and maybe Jerry mentioned it already and I missed it, this was presented last meeting, and the revisions are intended to address some concerns raised by the board members. And I believe, based on my own notes, that this, that the additions in red line should take care of the concerns that were raised at the prior meeting. But other than that, I think Jerry covered it, and I don't have additional comments.
Thank you, Patrick. So there is a motion needed for this if the board would entertain one.
Thank you, Jerry. Is that Ms. King with a question?
Yes. Just a quick understanding. What is the difference between selected physicians and medical physician or medical counselor?
Molly, this is Jerry. It's kind of your speaker doesn't, or your microphone isn't working very well, at least for me, because I'm having, it's kind of garbled. I'm sorry, I can't make it out. Could you ask that again, maybe louder?
I'm saying, what is the difference between the selected physician and the term medical panel physician, medical counselor?
Well, okay, so there is a long-standing distinction between those two organizations. The medical panel is an arrangement that, an older arrangement originally under the charter that was used for public safety people. The public safety bargaining units had the ability to appoint a physician to, you know, help adjudicate this disability, either re-exam or initial application. And then the city, through the workers' comp division, had an opportunity also to appoint a physician. So this was the process, and if there was a tie, then there would be a tiebreaker appointed upon agreement of two physicians in the medical panel. Subsequently, and the medical council is distinguished from the medical panel. The medical council is a three-doctor panel that is selected by the annuity and pension board, originally for the general city only, but now following collective bargaining some years ago, the charter was amended to provide for the medical council to do re-exams for all people hired. I believe it was after 2005. I don't remember the exact date, but so the medical panel and medical council both exist under our charter, and some applicants and re-exams go to the panel if they're public safety, and the rest of them go to the medical council. And again, the medical council is a three panel that physicians that is appointed by the board. And Molly, from time to time, you'll hear Gus and the staff here come in and you know, recommend an appointment or some other routine business having to do with the medical council, because the medical council is a creature of the annuity and pension board, although they are a separate entity under under the charter, and their meetings are in fact public. I hope that's a kind of an adequate explanation in a nutshell.
No, that's fine, Jerry. I appreciate that explanation. And just for my edification, does this have to go, because it changes the charter, the city charter, does this have to go before our council meeting here?
Well, this changes the board rules. There's a board rule 3, item E, that longstanding board rule that required people to come for reexaminations into the city of Milwaukee. And actually, you know, have their re-exam by a physician in the five-county area. But with the idea, this is really, it's really a chart review, and more than the doctors aren't actually examining people necessarily. I mean, it does happen on occasion, but generally it's a chart review, and the requirement was that they come in and present in person, because many of the cases that come before these two bodies are of the nature that the physicians would like to take a look at the person, especially if these involve, you know, muscle skeletal injuries, the backs and knees. They want to see how the person is functioning, and it's very common. I have an orthopedic physician myself, and here's a little peephole when you walk into his office. He wants to see how you're walking, and the doctors on the council and the panel want to do the same thing. So that's is a long-standing requirement, and so we did have this one case come up recently where the mere, you know, travel to Milwaukee was going to prove to be a health hazard because the person has been on kidney dialysis, and that's not a condition that's going to resolve. And so it seemed reasonable in the circumstance to, you know, consider this and, you know, give the two bodies, the council and the panel, the flexibility to do it going forward so that we don't have to create, there's a saying in the law that bad, hard facts make for bad law. And we didn't want to, you know, attempt some court to, you know, reverse decisions made by the council and panel and the board because of, you know, providing a health hazard to the individual. So we just thought it was an appropriate idea to not put people at risk. It's very rare. Like I said, it's never come up in 15 years. This is the first time. Thank you.
Thanks, Jerry.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Jerry. Go ahead, Tom.
I've just got two concerns with it. I don't mean to belabor this thing because I brought it up at the last meeting, but and hopefully I'd be more than willing or welcome Mr. Conrad or Mr. McLean's input on these pieces, but on this revision, shouldn't we want not the disability deputy director to notify us to maintain some organizational structure here, that staff people should be answering to the executive director, and the executive director is who answers and deals with us. So I would rather that, say, when the provision is waived, the executive director will notify the annuity and pension board. I don't want to start to build in processes where staff is responsible to the board. And lastly, whenever there's, again, organizationally, whenever there's a responsibility, it really should have some due date. And I would suggest that the end of this sentence we add at its next regular meeting, so that that last sentence would read more to the effect of, when the provision is waived, the executive director will notify the annuity and pension board at its next regular meeting.
Thank you, Tom.
Any feedback on that?
Thank you, Tom.
For feedback. I'm not married to that, so it just seems to me that that might be a better way.
Well, I do appreciate your defending our chain of command here, so thank you very much for that. I'd be happy to add that language, that it be the ED, and that it be reported immediately at the next meeting, so it's clear in the board rule. So would you be willing to entertain a motion as revised, or do you want to bring it back next month?
I'll motion to pass it with that revision if everyone else is good with that also.
Any other comments or questions from members?
This is Conrad. I just want to say I think it's a very good idea, having sat through many meetings in my career waiting to give a 30-second presentation. So it would be much more efficient to just have the executive director notify us in the course of reporting on these reexaminations. So I second the motion, if there was a motion. If not, I'll make the motion to approve as agreed, as modified.
I have one quick question, Mrs. Aicha.
Go ahead, Aicha.
Jerry, did you say this needs council approval or it doesn't?
No, it doesn't. This is a board rule. It just requires a board approval.
Okay, I just wanted to clarify. Thank you.
All right, any other comments or questions?
Mr. Chair, if you can put me down as a second to Mr. Conrad's motion, then.
We have a motion to approve the proposed change to Board Rule 3, period E, period, with the caveats of those changes that were mentioned. And we had a motion by Mr. Conrad, and then a second by Mr. Klusman. And any objections regarding? Not hearing any objections, the approval of the proposed change to Board Rule 3, period E, period, passes. Moving on to Item 5, letter G, approval of resolution for annuity and pension board member Captain James A. Campbell. I will read through this. A resolution, whereas Captain James A. Campbell served with distinction as a trustee of the Employees Retirement System of the City of Milwaukee continuously from January 2018 through December 2022, also serving as Annuity and Pension Board Vice Chair in 21 and 22, on the Investment Committee throughout his term of office and on the A&O Committee as well, and faithfully and conscientiously discharging his duty to solely represent the interests of all the members and beneficiaries of this system during his tenure of office. And whereas Captain James A. Campbell's knowledge of pension benefits enabled him to make many valuable contributions to the Annuity and Pension Board and the well-being of the employees' retirement system of the City of Milwaukee and its thousands of participants, including and especially his diligent stewardship in pursuing adequate funding for the system. And whereas Captain James A. Campbell served on the Investment Committee of the Annuity and Pension Board throughout his tenure, assisting in the development of the employees' retirement system's strategic asset allocation, which has generated hundreds of millions of dollars of long-term excess returns for the exclusive benefit of the system's members and beneficiaries, and exhibited the courage, discipline, and composure necessary to preserve the board investment policy during the COVID-19 pandemic market panic, and helped guide the system safely through perilous times with a steady and able hand. And whereas James A. Campbell's departure is a great loss to the Annuity and Pension Board and all the members and beneficiaries of the employees retirement system, therefore be it resolved by the Annuity and Pension Board that it hereby expresses its deep and sincere appreciation and gratitude for Captain James A. Campbell for his invaluable, selfless, and loyal service, and be it further resolved that this resolution be recorded in the permanent records of the board and that it's suitably engrossed copy be forwarded to James A. Campbell. Adopted January 24th. And do we have a motion to approve this resolution?
Board makes the motion.
Oops.
Thank you, Ms. Ford. And I have a second, I believe, for Mr. Conrad.
Correct.
Thank you, Mr. Conrad. Any objections regarding? Not hearing any, the motion, the resolution for this motion passes.
Thank you, Mr. Bell. We have an engrossed copy that we will circulate with all the trustees for their signature.
Great. Thank you,
Jan,
for
this morning. Thank you, Jan.
Thank you. Thank you, Jan, for doing that. The next item, 5. Letter H requires us to go into closed session, so please be advised that the Annuity and Pension Board may vote to convene in closed session on the following item. 5, letter H, as provided in section 19.85 sub 1 sub C, for considering employment, promotion, compensation, or performance evaluation data of any public employee over which the governmental body has jurisdiction or exercises responsibility. The board may then vote to reconvene in open session following the closed session. Do I have a motion to go into closed?
Allen, motion.
Thank you, Tim. Do I have a second?
Bossman.
Thank you, Tom. And any objections regarding? Not hearing any, motion to go into closed session passes, and it is 9:50 a.m.
I have to do a roll call.
Thank you, Jan.
Ms. Ford? Mr. Helling?
Aye.
Ms. King? Ms. King?
Aye.
Mr. Klusman?
Aye.
Mr. Conrad?
Aye.
Mr. Kovac?
Aye.
Ms. Sawa?
Aye.
Mr. Bell?
Aye.
Quorum, and if you just say the time.
Time is 9:51 a.m.
Thanks. The recorder is paused. Go ahead.
Great. The time is 10:03 a.m. We are back in open session for the meeting of the Annuity and Pension Board for the retirement system. We will move on to item six, letter A, all duty and ordinary disability applications and reexaminations for January.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is Jerry Allen again. So in your packet is the normal monthly reports of recommendations from the medical panel and also from the medical council. The first report is for the medical panel approvals, and these were all reexaminations, very much routine, and they're all recommended for approval by the medical panel. Both the union and city doctors are recommending approval for each of these individuals for the continuation of their payment of their benefits. The second report is the medical council approvals report, and again, these are all reexaminations, and the council is recommending approval of the reexams. The third report is a council denial report, and recommending denial of a duty disability application for a member of the MPS staff, Mr. David A. Frank, and that is their recommendation.
Thank you, Jerry. Any comments or questions from members or staff? Not hearing any. I'd like to put forward a motion to approve the medical reports. For January.
Mr. Hahn, a motion.
Thank you, Tim. Do I have a second?
Four seconds.
I'm sorry, was that Ms. Ford?
Yes.
Thank you, Ms. Ford. Any objections regarding? Not hearing any objections, the motion to approve medical reports for January passes. Moving on to item seven, unfinished business, letter A, pending legal opinions and service request reports. I believe that's Mr. McLean.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair, and good morning again, everyone. A couple of items on this report that I'd like to address. The first one, just briefly, there was an inquiry as to how employees who hold multiple positions with the city should be treated for purposes of pension benefits. Many thanks to Karen McElway, who pointed out that we have existing opinions on this issue. They're noted there on, or I'm sorry, they're included with the report in the packet, I believe, and the long and short of it is essentially that employees with multiple city positions can accrue service credit for both positions. However, total service credit in any calendar year cannot exceed essentially one calendar year of service credit. So you cap out at one calendar year. And then similarly, the salaries for both positions can be used when calculating final average salary. So a rare opportunity where we have existing opinions and saved us a little bit of trouble. So before I move on to the next item, does anyone have any questions on that?
Thank you, Patrick. Any comments? Not hearing any. We can move on, Patrick.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. The second item is the indemnification agreement. And there's been some delay on that, and for pretty good reason. We were assessing whether an indemnification agreement for the board and ERS was even necessary based on a number of different factors. So, as this board will recall, we reviewed some opinions over the last year related to going back to 2002 and 2003, several both Milwaukee City Attorney opinions and outside counsel opinions that determined that both the annuity and pension board and the pension system itself are city agencies, and that therefore ERS employees are city employees. This is significant because the state statutory indemnification provisions for municipal employees does just that. It applies to public officers and employees acting within the scope of their employment. So, you know, given those existing opinions and the language within the statute, we undertook an assessment of whether a separate indemnification agreement was even required to essentially afford municipal indemnity to the ERS. And our conclusion, and again, it's has not been codified in a final city attorney opinion, and that would be the final say on the matter. But based on our internal discussions, we believe that the ERS is already covered by the state statutory provisions, and that therefore an indemnity agreement is not necessary. And before I turn to questions, I'll just note that that's actually a benefit for the board, because the existing indemnification agreement had some exclusions of coverage in there, which arguably could have provided less coverage than the state statutory provisions. So the bottom line here is that while we're still pending a formal city attorney opinion, we believe that the ERS and its employees, as well as the annuity and pension board, would be covered by the state indemnity provision, and that therefore a separate agreement is unnecessary to extend that coverage. And so with that, I would be happy to entertain any questions.
Thank you, Patrick. Any comments or questions regarding?
Yeah, this is Rudy Conrad. I agree with you entirely. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Rudy. Anything else regarding? Not hearing any. We will move on to now item 7, letter B, the pending legislation report.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chairman. At present, we don't have any new developments to report on any of the items, part 1, 2, or 3. But stay tuned. If there is some legislation that either at the local or state level, we'll immediately report to the board on that. But nothing to report at this point.
Thank you, Jerry. Any comments or questions from board members? Not hearing any, we'll move on to item 7, letter C, executive director's report. Go ahead, Jerry.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chairman. On the personnel update, we're working with the ER to fill a vacancy for records technician 2. I'm happy to report that that's underway. On member services, we had many new retirees on payroll 47 in December. We're expecting about almost the same number, 45, in the month of January. The report, of course, is in the file. We did have an extraordinary amount of deaths towards the end of the year in November, and you'll see next month in December, unfortunately, where a lot of our retirees passed away. Retirement workshop dates, we have a number set up for General City and a couple for police and fire. And then, of course, the really good news here is that we're going back to having in-person meetings. And actually, they're really hybrid meetings. People can still dial in on WebEx if they prefer to do so, that so they don't have to come downtown or sit next to other people if they're concerned about, you know, the flu and COVID and RSV season. And the meetings will be smaller groups than before. We've got room up in the conference space upstairs for about 25 people to sit comfortably and well spaced out. So if we need more meetings then in order to accommodate a smaller room, we'll do that as well. But so far, that doesn't look like it's necessary. And I'm happy to report that both our life insurance specialist positions have now been filled. We have a number of good applicants, and so we're very happy with having new people on board. One was promoted from our records tech position, which is why we have a vacancy. It's part of the daisy chain that sometimes develops when people promote that leaves a vacancy, and that's what's happened in this case. Skipping down to financial services, 1099 forms are being processed this week as I speak, actually, for the tax reporting for 2022. Baker Tilly was here, and they've completed their preliminary field work on the audit already. So this is for the 22 financial audit. And the really great news here is that we received early employer contributions for 2023 from the City of Milwaukee, MPS, MMSD, Water, Hackam, and Veolia. As you may recall, some of you, that these contributions for the calendar year not really due and payable until the end of January in the subsequent year. So the 23 contribution wouldn't be payable in full until January 31st of 2024. And the city this year contributed $100 million in the first working day of the new year. And that's a substantial increase over previous years. I believe the last couple of years were about $71 million. And if there's any additional contributions due and payable by January 31st, we will be able to determine that based on the actuary's valuation, which he is scheduled to present in July, if everything goes well. And usually if there's any more due, there will be a true-up at the end of the year, you know, before January 31. So we won't know the outcome of that until the valuation. And as we've discussed, there are some inputs in the way of decisions from the board that are necessary to complete that valuation, most notably adoption of all of the proposed assumptions, both economic and demographic assumptions that the actuary has recommended, you know, as a part of the five-year experience study that was presented last fall. The board, I guess, will be, well, it's really up to the trustees, but I'm thinking that perhaps on the 28th of February, Larry will be back to, you know, review the all the assumptions, particularly the economic assumption, the big one being the discount rate. And Callan is preparing some materials now that will aid in that process. And so we expect to see Larry back on the 28th. Callan will be here on the 9th for an investment committee meeting, and they will be talking about the first phase of our ALM study that will incorporate their new capital market assumptions and be, you know, pointing in the direction of a reasonable discount rate. So that's all I have on that item. For information services, Jeff Schober is a very quiet guy because everything is clean and green with Jeff almost every month. And when we have our three times weekly staff meetings, Jeff has very little to say other than all systems are go. So thank you very much for that, Jeff. The last item has to do with an exceptional occurrence that hasn't really happened before in my tenure. The actuary was requested by the administration and the budget office to provide some figures for Speaker of the Assembly, Robin Voss. And so Larry and I traveled to the Capitol, and we were accompanied by, Larry came separately, but I was accompanied by Jim Boll, who's the new head of the IRD, which is the Intergovernmental Relations Division Department, on the 18th. And we attended a meeting where we were asked to provide some pension funding data and answer other questions for Speaker Voss and his staff who was there. And this was a very interesting meeting. Again, this is the first time in my tenure that this has happened. There were about 25 people in the room, including, much to my surprise, there were six representatives there from the Wisconsin retirement system, including their top two officials. And they were there, I guess, as a an objective third party about pension matters, to at the request of the speaker. And so Larry presented his financial impact analysis prepared by his firm at the request of the speaker and the administration as to what the financial impact would be if the ERS were to be closed to new hires, such that all existing of our 29,000 members and beneficiaries would remain in our current plan, but the new people hired after a certain date, whenever that would be, probably not before 2024 at the earliest, would be enrolled into the WRS as members of the WRS. And I did include a copy of Larry's report that was requested, and I'm happy to answer questions about that. He'll be here too later, as I mentioned, in February, if you have other questions for him. But, and of course, we'll continue to monitor any actual legislative proposals. There's nothing been introduced yet. I am told, however, that this would be part of some, I guess, for lack of a better word, I'm using the word demands from the Speaker of the House that if there's going to be any forthcoming financial assistance to the city, that it be accompanied by some reforms that he's insisting on, including especially the closure of our plan to new hires, and that this legislation would have to take place before the state budget is approved, and that it might even be as soon as March. And I've been told by the IRD people that this might, if there's going to be proposed legislation, that might be introduced within the next 3 weeks, in fact. Further, there's been additional information requested by the speaker from the actuary. He's asked about what would happen if the plan were closed and all the unfunded liability, which currently stands at about $1.1 billion, were to be paid off over 10 years, which is actually, according to Larry's firm, the actuarially required standard for closing a plan. And so, and some other questions that they had, Larry's in the process of preparing that. I should add that Larry's firm did a great job in doing this. They only had about 4 business days to pull this together over the New Year's holiday and again over the MLK holiday. So they did a terrific job, and I want to note, especially for everyone who's on the phone listening, the cost of this, this is a fire drill actually, the cost of this will all be paid by the city. The system will not bear any of the cost of this. As Mr. McClain can attest, that the system is required by Internal Revenue Code and also by our city charter to only pay for the reasonable administrative expenses of operating the fund. The plan sponsor has to pay for any costs of redesigning the plan or making plan amendments. So whatever bill comes in from the actuary for doing this on short notice will be passed on through, well, we don't pay anything initially anyway, but it will be paid by the city, and we will not reimburse the city for any of the costs associated with this, including Larry's time, his firm's time, and his travel, et cetera, et cetera. That's just a kind of a minor note. But we've also been invited back on this Thursday to speak with the majority leader of the Senate, Devin LeMahieu. He apparently has some of the same kinds of questions that Speaker Voss did. Larry will be attending that as well, along with Jim Bowe from the IRD. And we'll keep you posted about any of that, any developments in that, or answer anybody's questions about it. So, and then secondly, I did include a copy of a proposal that was approved by the Finance and Personnel Committee at its January 11th meeting to engage the Public Policy Forum to conduct a study to explore shared internal services at the city and county of Milwaukee, and including pension administration, as referenced in on page 2 of that document. And I included a link to a video clip of the F&P meeting. There was a significant discussion, I think it was 45 minutes to an hour, where the committee discussed whether they wanted to do this. They eventually approved it. It was about $22,000 and informed. And the thing about this study is that it's projected to take a year. And there were some questions from members of the committee about how that would be consistent with the idea that the legislature would make decisions about funding for the city, and especially for pension funding, by the end of June without having this information. But nonetheless, they decided to go ahead with it. And I guess it is separate, but sort of on the same idea that Speaker Voss has mentioned, that he's requiring concessions in the form of reforms that I guess they're looking for what in the corporate world we used to call synergies, from combining administration of the city and the county administrative services. I will say one thing about this for the benefit of the trustees, and I hope you would all agree with me. The fellow from the Public Policy Forum, Rob Henkel, or Henke rather, who used to be apparently the county director of administration, mentioned that he thought that there would be in some cases what he termed in sort of technocratic terms as non-scalable barriers, okay? Which is, again, that's language that means, impediments that, for which scale wouldn't be useful. And we have some of those here at the ERS, okay? Specifically, and most notably, there is a 2018 Supreme Court case that held that the members of this fund have as one of their pension rights the right to elect trustees to a board that administers their plan, including their record keeping, their payment of benefits, and their investment of plan assets. So that's not something that's scalable. Having more members between city and county doesn't really change that that legal requirement. So if we're told that they will come around and interview departments over the next 12 months, and I believe that's one thing that I will be willing to mention to him, that's one thing that's not scalable. Also, there is two separate plans. The county has a plan, we have a plan, and those requirements for obtaining plan benefits are different for each case. And as you all know from having attended our board meetings over many years, we have one of the most complicated pension plans in the world with about 44,000 different ways to figure benefits. So that's another example of a non-scalable barrier. So we'll see what happens out of that discussion, but I suspect there aren't a lot of synergies in trying to combine these plans because they would have to be merged and have comparable benefits in order for there to be scalable benefits from combining administration. But we'll see what comes out of it, and in any case, I believe the state will make its decision one way or another for this biennial budget by the end of June, I'm told, without regard to hearing from the Public Policy Forum as to whether there's any synergies for shared services, because the deadline for the state action, well, it's not really a deadline, but customarily they wind this budget up before, in midsummer, before the end of June or July. So those are my comments about that. I'd be happy to entertain any questions now or later from the trustees about, how this is progressing. And of course, we'll keep you informed immediately on any developments. So thank you. Sorry for being so long-winded.
That's right, Jerry. Thank you for all the good info. A lot to digest. Any comments or questions from members or staff?
Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead, Rudy.
Mr. Allen, just to be clear to people who are listening, when you use the term close the fund, you're really referring to closing the fund to new entrants.
That is correct. And theoretically, you could merge two pension plans, but that's not what has been put on the table by the legislature as a requirement for considering funding. That it would be just the new hires, and that this fund would, continue to maintain its own separate assets and liabilities. And there's been no concrete legislative proposal. There were some drafts previously that were done by Senator Koyanga before he left office a year or so ago that included a similar provision in the draft that the fund would be closed. And Patrick's on the line. State pension law is somewhat unclear about what's required to actually enact the closure. There are collective bargaining rights for public safety employees, and pension is mandatory subject to collective bargaining. It's not clear that the city actually would have the unilateral authority to close this plan, since it was originally authorized by act of the legislature. And could the legislature unilaterally do this without regard to collective bargaining? I'm not sure about it. Patrick, do you have any comments on all of that?
Yeah, good morning again, everyone. There's really a lot to unpack there, and I don't know how deeply the board wants to explore this, but I think Jerry hit the nail on the head by saying that the state of pension law in Wisconsin is not the best. And it's not always clear, as this board found out back in 2018 with the Wisconsin Supreme Court decision that, you know, effectively reorganized the board. It's difficult to predict what courts will do when pension rights are at stake. And, you know, certainly the legislature would be in the best position to enact, you know, what would really be unilateral amendments to existing provisions. But there are certainly legal questions and risks there. So, we could talk about this all day. I don't know how deeply the board wants me to go into this, but the long and short of it is, you know, there are certainly legal questions that would surround this and risk of litigation.
Thank you, Patrick.
Thank you, Patrick. Yeah, there's a lot to discuss. Jerry, do you think it would be a good plan if you put this on for a discussion at the next meeting? We'll have a little more clarity 4 weeks from now.
Well, by all means, especially if there's any legislation introduced, we'll have copies of it available to everybody. But even if there isn't, we'll still keep it on the agenda for discussion. And we'll obviously monitor the situation and report any developments.
And is this, I know you've been talking about a quick turnaround on some of these developments. Would this be something that we'd have to possibly do a special meeting for, just to warn trustees if that's gonna come up quickly, or will we have some time?
Well, I think if there's something introduced, the bill introduced, I will circulate it immediately, and then we can confer about whether you want to have a special meeting, Mr. Chairman. That might not be a bad idea.
All right. Thank you, Jerry. Thank you, Patrick. Any other comments from members?
Mr. Chair? Oh, someone else.
Go ahead, Tom.
Yeah, I just wanted to quickly point out a couple things, because I watched both the public policy forum interview with Speaker Voss and them and State Rep. Kaywood. That Jerry provided to us, and also the Finance and Personnel Committee meeting that Jerry mentions here on January 11th for Council File 221-365. And it's clear that the two are related, because the Council File is an outcome of Speaker Voss's mandate that he's going to want some type of, for lack of a better term, some global settlement of any kind of funding help. He mentioned that several times, that he wants some agreements to be made. And now everyone's looking at all these different things that Jerry laid out very well for us. And what I'm getting to here is that I think we need to, as a board, direct, if that's what is necessary, Jerry to, I think Jerry would be a good person to be the speaker advocate for our fund, because right now, as I saw on the in the F&P meeting, two of our board members were there, but it puts them in a very unfair position to speak out to advocate for the fund when they're in their other role, which many of us have other roles that we have to wear different hats. But my point being, the F&P file 221-365 talks about sharing and disturbingly integrating us with the county with cost sharing. Now I get that they're talking broadly for cost sharing, and you know, like I know city streets are plowed by both county plows and city plows and things like that, and there is. But we as a fund and as a board responsible to advocate for our members and this fund, we cannot have our fund integrate with that hot mess that is the county fund. I mean, we need to keep a firewall between these two and let our fund continue to run with the successes that it's always had. And we don't want them in our business or us in their business. And I think as Jerry monitors this, I think we should tell him if he needs to be told. I think he knows to do it, but if he goes with a mandate from the board that whenever these discussions come up, as the director of the pension fund, he should kind of pipe, you know, stick a foot in the door and say, you know, hey, you know, go do that. You know, look at your many, many, many other city services that may or may not overlap, but do not stick your foot in the pension fund. And I think he's got a lot of, I mean, he'll come up with very good reasons, but, you know, they're very glaring one that I see. Is that they're looking at cost savings to looking for cost savings to for the overlap and in service sharing. So you're going to get, you know, some benefit to doing that. It's not going to be dollar for dollar, you know, because, you know, there's still an increased cost. There's a decreased cost when you're doing it the same thing with by one entity than you are with two, but it's even further watered down when you look at the fact that 80% of the, you know, that our fund, as Jerry mentioned earlier to Mr. Helling, is completely funded by the fund. All our expenses are completely funded, and 80% of that comes from Dave and Narek's team. So to have some residual savings by sticking us with working with the county to just help that 20% employer contribution that really comes into to fund us is going to be so minimal, it's not worth the risk. And I think somebody needs to be in the room to remind them of this, because as this develops, and I know they're looking for solutions to this financial issue, as Mr. Kovic mentioned many times in his life as an alderman, that when you let legislators under your hood, you know, sometimes bad things can come out that were unintended, and that's what I'm trying to get us ahead of, so that we don't end up with some mandate to integrate with them. Any feelings on that, Jerry and others?
Well, I would add one thing to that, Tom. I'm not sure there's any savings possible at all, because quite frankly, these plans are different and they have separate administration systems. We have merits, okay, which cost tens of millions of dollars to develop and maintain. The county went outsourced with a firm called Vitech. We looked at them. The state of Wisconsin tried using Vitech, but they abandoned it halfway through the project because it was running over cost and over budget. It wasn't adequate for their purposes either. Vitech is not adequate to administer this plan. They couldn't keep track of all the various, you know, thousands of iterations we have. And of course, the experience the county has had is, you know, we all know what it is. It's been in the newspapers and headlines over the years. So both these plans would still have, well, they still have separate benefit requirements, and they still require separate administrative systems. So I'm not sure where the cost savings, if any, would be. In fact, there's a potential it could cost more, quite frankly. If you were to try to build a single system that would accommodate both, that would be another merits type project with no doubt tens of millions of dollars of expenditure. So I think, Tom, thank you for the confidence. I do think there'll be an opportunity to talk about this further when we get notice, if we do, from the public policy forum that they want to come and talk to us. I don't think they want to talk to us first. I think they have some other departments like DPW and other places where they want to, you know, do their analysis first, but somewhere down the line they're going to knock on the door and say, we'd like to talk to you, and then we'll of course be happy to, you know, converse with them and explain to them that, you know, that the county plan and the city plan are both separate by law, and, you know, it'd be very difficult and expensive to merge them. That's my view of it anyway.
Good. Well, that's a real life example of exactly my point, is that in your head are the reasons why these folks that don't know, and they start to wield their sword around, may not know the consequence of that. And we need you at the front to be telling them that, because I think everybody in this room just learned something new right there. And when they come up with these great ideas, they need to hear the realities that you know of.
Thank you.
you, Tom and Jerry. Any other comments?
No.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
I'm sorry, who is that?
It's Conrad.
Go ahead, Conrad.
I don't have anything really to add other than I agree with the way Jerry put it. And I know Mr. Klusman is not one shy to take positions. I think a hard no is not a good thing to have when things are in flux. A better position, I think, is, and I don't think Mr. Klusman recommended that either, but I think the better position is the way Jerry outlined it. Certainly, if it could result in substantial cost savings and benefits to the public, we would consider a consolidation. But based on what we know now, it wouldn't save money, and it wouldn't improve either system because they're very different, and the number of employees required to run two systems and the computer costs and consultants, you really can't merge these things. But if someone can, you know, demonstrate that there are real savings, then we should certainly say that we would review that to see if we agree if it's viable. But like I say, when things are up in the air, you have to be a little careful that you don't throw some hardballs around. That's all I have to say.
Thank you, Mr. Conrad. Any other comments regarding? All right, not hearing any. Just wanted to make one on a different note, just a quick comment on the record. I received a phone call from a ERS member. He was having some difficulty getting in contact with the ERS office. I immediately contacted Jerry regarding, and Jerry sorted it out very quickly to the members' concerns, and it got addressed. I believe it was a telephone issue using an old number, Jerry, but I just wanted to thank Jerry and the staff for addressing that quickly and providing that service to the members.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And other than that, any other comments or questions? All right, not hearing any, we completed item 7. Moving on to item 8 is all informational, and it will be placed on file unless there's any comments or questions. All right, not hearing any, I will entertain a motion to conclude the meeting.
Klusman, motion.
Thank you, Mr. Klusman. Do I have a second?
Kovac, second.
Thank you, Mr. Kovac, and that concludes the meeting. Time is 10:41 a.m. Everyone have a good day.